Hi, it's Michael Sinoff with Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. I want to welcome all the HMA consultants to the April 13th conference call. This is a conference call we did mainly focusing on Dave Flannery's experience as an HMA consultant, his successes, his learning experiences, and his advice. The call was stimulated by Rob Henshaw, one of our new HMA consultants. He really wanted to grill David on the specifics, get inside his mind, understand what makes him tick, what's given him the success. I think you're going to find it very helpful to really get in the mind of Dave Flannery and how he's operating his consulting practice successfully. I hope you can learn from this call. Again, it's two parts, so let's get going. Mike, I wanted to ask Dave Flannery and you for a favor. It would be both helpful and encouraging if you could do an interview with Dave on the specifics of his three clients that are getting great results. We don't need to know the company names, but I would love to hear the exact things that got results in those cases. I want details, every last little speck of what it took. Questions may include, what do these companies do? What are the USPs you found for them? How did you find those USPs? What steps did you take? Can you quantify the steps you took to get the USPs? How many customers did you talk to? How many employees? How long did you spend with the employees? How long did you spend with the owners or managers? For each company, what was a light bulb moment when you knew you had a solid USP for that company? How did you present the USP to each company? Did you ever sense the client questioning the value of your service? And in step two, what were the marketing areas for USP integration for each of these three companies? Be specific. List them for each. Which action in step two seemed to get the most result for the bottom line? Which activities seemed beneficial but did not get quantifiable results for the business? When was the first moment you knew results were happening for your clients? When you knew all the weeks of studying the HMA system was finally getting measurable increases in revenue for the businesses that hired you? What was the feeling you got when you saw those results? If David is open to an interrogation-style interview, we might three-way call him and get out the details together. Kind regards, Rob. So that's exactly what I sent to Dave. And then Dave emailed me back, and here's what he said. Hi, Michael. Wow. Fair play to the guy that asked for that. It's the first sign of life from any other HMA consultant. To be honest, I thought I would be getting a lot more of this type of request and a lot sooner than now from other new HMA consultants eager to model the success I've had. It would be an honor to help in any way I can, and I have no problem with the kind of interview. I say bring it on and let all consultants ask as many questions as they want and any type of question they want. I may not have all the answers they're looking for, but I will try my best to help. If I am to do this, I do ask for one thing. I want them to challenge me with their perspective and their view, not just blindly take my answers at face value. I love his use of language, very vivid, interrogation type of interview to get out the details. I love it, Dave. So that's why we're here. So I've got Rob on the line, and Rob, I'm just going to turn it over to you, and I'll sit back, and I may pipe in every once in a while, and I'm just going to let you ask Dave all the questions you need to. Okay?
Great.
All right.
Hey, Rob. Michael. Hi, Dave. Oh, thanks. Things are great. Things are going good. A lot of your success has really encouraged me. I'm probably going about maybe not even 10% of what you're going in your business.
That doesn't matter. As long as you've got a goal and you're determined to get there, you'll get there.
I'm going to back up a minute, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I came up with some more questions between that email and now. We were talking about your attention to detail. You plan everything in your life. I mean, you've got everything scheduled out. Where did you learn that? Does that just come natural to you? Do you have a role model?
Not really. I think it just comes naturally to me. A lot of it, I'd say, came from university, from doing the MBA, because an MBA is a data dump, and you have to kind of plan your time to get through that data and get what you need done, but it doesn't happen to me now. But in my childhood, I had a very bad memory, so I had to write everything down. And that's where it came from as well, especially in secondary school, what would be, I think, high school for you. I had a very bad memory, so I wrote everything down, and it just helped me to remember stuff. And as I trained my memory in university, I took courses to train memory, and like CD courses, and I went to a couple of courses given by trainers. I think that's where it came from, and I never really got out of the habit of writing it down, thank God, because it's the only way to go, because if you don't write down your plan, you're going to forget it. All the things are going to take over your life, as life does, you know? And you start on Monday, and you get to a Friday, and you have nothing done, and that's a week of your life you're not going to get back. I'm very action-orientated. I am my worst critic. There's nobody in the world harder on me than myself. If I go from Monday to Friday and I don't get a certain amount of things done or get done what I want to get done, I'm pretty hard on myself. Okay. I think that's just my nature.
All right, you mentioned your MBA. Another question I had is, you mentioned your thesis before. What was that thesis on?
The profit equation.
Okay, and that is what?
Profit equation is price multiplied by quantity minus fixed costs minus variable costs multiplied by quantity. Basically, it's just price multiplied by quantity minus costs gives you profit.
Okay.
And my thesis involved how to turn that theoretical equation into a practical tool for the use in building profit within businesses.
Is that something we could read? Because of the talk about your cost reduction step in the system, and I mentioned my experience with reducing costs, not even on purpose really, but for the business I'm working for here in town, I'd be really interested to see what you have for that.
Sure.
Were you going to come up with something specific for that step?
It's not something I thought of, but if there was an overwhelming request for it, I could certainly put something down and give it to Michael, and if Michael wants to put it up.
Do you do that with your current clients?
Yeah, I personally do, yes.
I'd be interested just to see what it looks like, particularly what you just call their suppliers and servicing.
Yeah, there's a lot of things you can do. Rob, a lot of it is just asking. I mean, you go into these businesses, and what you have to understand is, and you have to go in with the mental attitude that you know more about what you do than they do. Now, let me qualify that. They know more about their business than you do.
For more interviews like this, please go to hardtofindseminars.com.
My high-end art dealer, right? He knows more about art than I do, because what I know about art would fit on the back of a postage stamp. But he can tell me things that I need to know so that I can market that. So when you go into your client's business, now I'm not talking about startups, I'm talking about like 1 or 2 years or 3 years or 5 years or whatever amount of time they've been in business. They're just focused on one thing. What's that? Getting more customers, getting more customers. You know, the first way to grow a business. So you go in there and they're probably using the same suppliers that they've been using for the entire life of their business. And every single one of those suppliers is probably up their price by a certain percentage, blaming inflation or blaming high cost of overheads or whatever it might be. And they're passing that on to your client. And your client has probably been eating that because they don't have negotiation skills, so they just take it. Or they don't know the market and they don't know where to go for alternate suppliers. So they just eat that cost because either they couldn't be bothered or they just don't know how to get the alternate suppliers. There's a lot of places you can look. Again, then, you've got bank charges. I mean, everything's negotiable. Bank charges are negotiable. But how many of the clients have gone to the bank manager and said, look, am I on the right option? Is there more options for me? I mean, I guarantee none of your clients that you'll go into in the next year will have gone to their bank manager and said, look, I need to cut costs. Can you help me? Right? You can do that. I mean, there's a lot of ways. The easiest way is to go in and cut overhead costs like you did. Telephone bills, electricity bills, water supply, utility supply, printing costs, print cartridge costs, photocopying costs, paper storage costs, file storage costs, try and make them go paperless, can they go paperless, things like that. When I go into a situation like that, I'm so used to it at this stage that I automatically put the business to about 500 filters at the same time. I'll give you an analogy. It's amazing how breakthroughs are just like light bulbs going off in your head from very strange places. In my circle of friends, I have a lot of doctors, junior doctors and trainee doctors and things like that. I watch very little TV, but one that I do TV is a program called House MD. Do you know that?
I don't watch TV at all.
No, okay. The House MD is about a doctor. One of the doctor's games, when they're out on a weekend, they come back and have this drinking game. And every time the word differential analysis is mentioned, they drink a pint. That's used about 10 or 12 times during the program. They are pretty wasted, okay, over a weekend. But I asked them, what's a differential analysis? Because I didn't understand what a differential analysis was, right? Essentially what differential analysis is, a Socratic questioning method that doctors use to find out what's wrong with you. So you go to your doctor and he'll say, where does it hurt? How does it hurt? Is it throbbing? And he goes to a whole load of different questions and comes out with an analysis, differential analysis, okay? And that's what's wrong with you, an appendix or whatever it might be. And I was kind of thinking to myself, well, what I do is a kind of reverse differential analysis. And the problem is that my client, let's say patient, isn't making enough profit. That's what's wrong with him. So I'm reverse differential because in the doctor's case, he doesn't know what's wrong. And he asks questions to get to it. But in my case, I do know what's wrong, that they're not making enough profit. But my question is, why aren't they making enough profit? And that's the attitude I go in with now, like in my growth as a HMA consultant. I go in and I ask, why aren't they making enough profit? And they're the filters my mind goes through. Cost reduction is one of those filters, and the other 7 or 8 filters then is the HMA process. Do they have USP? Is it integrated? Do they have a referral system? Do they use endorsements? Have they PR? You know, things like that. But it happens so fast with me now, because I'm so used to it and I'm talking to so many people over the phone. That just happens automatically with me. Does that make sense?
That's great. We can go into a little detail. Like, give us an example of one of your clients that you took through this step.
Most of the cost reduction steps that I have initiated are with existing clients. I haven't used it as an initial step yet because I only kind of formalized it in my own mind in the last 6 to 8 weeks, maybe. Not even that. So it's kind of an ongoing thing within my clients now. So I haven't actually crystallized it into a formal step. I've actually broken down to 5 steps. I'm trying to kind of crystallize it down to 4 so it fits in with the rest of the HMA system, but I may not be able to do that. But I don't actually have steps as in a crystallized form like the rest of the HMA system is at the moment. At the end of the day, that is my goal to do. Just look for the low-hanging fruit is basically what I'm doing at the moment. I mean, are they paying too much for supplies? Have they alternate suppliers? Do they have any leverage from that? Does anybody have negotiating skills and are they using them? I can't give you percentages. It's very unformalized for me at the moment, and I know you're looking for answers, and I'm not trying to sidestep the issue. It's just that I don't want to give you a false sense of what's going on. At the moment, my cost structure step is just me going in and doing various things. I mean, for my next 8 clients, I will have it formalized as a step before defining USP.
Was it a selling point, or is it just something you added in?
It's just something I added in that don't even know that it wasn't supposed to be there.
Okay.
I was beta testing this when I was working with my clients. So you could say I'm still beta testing it in real life now. But it's not formalized yet. Like I said, this is my own personal depth. Because my USP is so strong and kind of puts me on the spot, it's 20% in 20 days. That's a lot to get done in 20 days. I needed to come up with a kick-ass, action-orientated, like get the results fast step. Which the USP won't do. That does not mean that the USP is not the most important step in the whole process. It still is, don't get me wrong. Step number one, USP. Step number three, database marketing, are the two most important steps in this whole process. One, because the USP is a differentiator. You can't do anything unless you're differentiated. And number three is where all the value and leverage is in the business.
How much time are you spending on your USPs?
How much time did I spend with my clients in getting that?
My first major one took me like a week, but I worked hard at it and got it done.
Yeah, it can do. I mean, it's not going to come overnight. And, I mean, I've had to change one, not greatly, but I've changed one. What you have to understand is this is not a static system. It's not a static process. When you go through the steps, just because you're step number one done and you're on step number two, doesn't mean you don't have to go back and tweak step number one. I mean, you can be back down on step number six and you might have to go back and tweak step number one. Just because on your chart, on your planner, you have set out, let's say, the first of the month to the end of the month for USP, and you go through that month and you do the USP, doesn't mean that 4 months down the line, when you're on step number four, that you don't have to go back to step number one and tweak it. I think a lot of people are thinking that this is a static process. It's not very fluid. And that's why you have to manage your own time, and you have to manage the client's time as well, because you have to get face time with your clients. If you don't have face time with your clients, you're working in a vacuum. And if you do that, number one, you're going to lose control of the project, and number two, your clients are just not going to know what's going on, which makes them very edgy, which makes them kind of nightmare clients.
How do you handle that?
Oh, I meet all my clients for 1 hour a week, and 1 hour is a minimum. I told them that we're meeting on whatever day I assign them at that time, and I say I want the owner there, plus whatever member of staff deems it necessary to be there. But I have that 1 hour, and that's outside the time I spend with the company working the system. That's outside it completely. That's an hour that we sit down without phone calls, without interruptions, and we just talk, like me and you are talking now. And we talk about the system, and we talk about how they feel about it, how it's going. Rather than coming in and doing the fine things like, I need to do a customer survey, or I need to do a competitive analysis, or this is what I'm doing. None of that. An hour is set by to find out how the client feels about what's going on, how he feels about the direction it's going. Does he think it's worth it? How do you think that I am interacting with the company? Just things like that that can start off small, but can grow into a mega, mega problem if it's not managed. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that's the perfect answer right there.
What you have to understand is you're in a relationship game. It's like taking a girl on a date, okay? There's no point in winking at her in the dark. You're the only one that knows you're winking. At the end of the day, the client is your boss. I know there's no contractual obligation on you to treat him like that, but you'd be crazy not to. And you have to manage your boss. Manage them. They're human beings. Like I said, this is their life. This is their baby. And you're going in and you're messing with it. And they want to know that you're doing the right thing. So you have to manage that relationship. I mean, that is probably the most important thing you're going to have to learn how to do, is get on with people. Even if you don't like them, even if you think they're the worst manager in the world, or whatever it might be, or owner, or you treat the staff bad, but I mean, that's the staff's problem. For your goal, which is like 20% growth in 20 days, guaranteed, you hit that. You hit your USP. And if you think you're not going to hit your USP, the first person that has to know is your client. Tell them why it may or may not happen. But you have to manage that relationship. I leave aside 1 hour, and if the owner can't make it, there's no not turning up to this meeting. The owner knows it. The staff know it. If I say I want the head of whatever, or I want a machinist, or I want this, or I want that there, that person is there. The owner is there. The owner has to be there. There's no fobbing off onto the manager. The guy who signs my check is there. I mean, if he didn't turn up to two of my meetings, I would seriously consider letting him go as a client. Because at the end of the day, he is the boss. It's his business. And if he can't be arsed turning up, and you're trying to make him more money, and if he can't be arsed turning up to 1 hour meeting a week, well then, what happens when something does go wrong? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're tough.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I had an owner no-show me last night to a meeting.
Well, what does that tell you? Let me ask you a question. If you were a business owner who was serious about his business, who was serious about getting value for money, who was serious about making a real go of it, and someone came to him and said, listen, over the next 4 months or 8 months or whatever it might be, I can double or triple your income, your sales. If that was me, I'd tie that guy to a chair, force feed him on water and not let him out of my sight for the 8 months. I'd say, you go, you do it, but not to turn up. Let me ask you a question. What does that tell you about somebody?
They don't see the value?
They don't see the value. And if they don't see the value at the start, and something goes iffy in the middle, which could very well happen. You know what I mean? Everybody's human. Everybody sits up. I mean, I've made two colossal mistakes. Why it didn't wipe me out, I don't know. I'm still praying to God and thanking Him. It didn't wipe me out. They were rookie mistakes, and people told me about them before I started, and I agreed with them, and then I did the exact opposite. But the thing about it is, I had a relationship with them, and I went to them, and I'd managed the relationship over the weeks. And I said, look, this is going to stall it up, and we talked about it and whatever else. But I mean, if he can't be arsed now, unless somebody died, or he was in an accident, or whatever else might be, I mean, everybody can spare an hour.
Dave, what were the two colossal mistakes you made, just for the listeners?
Oh, sorry, not getting a database up and running, the very first step. That was probably the biggest one, and not controlling growth, not getting that out in the op analysis at the very start. So to the HMA consultants that are going to be listening to this in the university, two things. During the op analysis, make sure that you qualify them, that they're able to handle the growth that you can bring them. Number two, the very first thing you do when you get a client is find out if they have a database. And if they don't have a database, get them working on it. And that gives you 2 clear months of them working on a database so you can use it for step number three. I didn't either. And like I said, why it didn't wipe me out, I don't know. I think it's because I managed the relationship so well up to that date that they kind of, not took pity on me, but they knew that it wasn't on purpose and that I could pull it back.
What books are you talking about on managing your boss or managing relationships?
I'm going to give you the name of a book that helps me. It's not really about managing boss, but it provides a good framework for getting to kind of manage and start. It's called The First 90 Days. It's written by a man named Michael Watkins. That's W-A-T-K-I-N-S. It's by the Harvard Business School Press. ISBN 1591391105. That book helped me fantastic. So I'll just kind of give you a rundown of contents. Promote yourself. Accelerate your learning. Match strategy to situation. Secure early wins. Negotiate success. Achieve alignment. Build your team. Create coalitions. Keep your balance. Expedite everyone, and build your team. I mean, at the end of the day, your team is your client's team. Do you know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about building relationships within the business so that they are actually your team. Because at the end of the day, they have to execute everything you're doing after you're gone. You're masterminding, administrating, and executing the system while you're there under agreement. But when you're gone, these people have to do the exact same thing that you've been doing. So you're training them at the same time. So you have to get a kind of a team atmosphere going. At this stage, and maybe it's because I'm so busy and whatever else, if a business owner didn't turn up for 1 hour meeting with me, I would take it as a huge, huge insult.
So Rob, explain what happened. What meeting did you have, and which client was it with, and what happened?
This is the general store that I'm working with at a meeting. Monday we start training employees to increase sales. We're going to go through some of the training material right out of the HMA course. And this meeting was basically for him to approve an incentive program I wrote out for the clerks to increase their sales to register through suggestive selling.
And he said he was going to be there?
He said he was going to be there.
Yeah, he wrote it down. I went right to his house, actually, but I went to the store when he wasn't home, and they said he was out with some of the managers looking at a product line.
Have you spoke to him about it?
No, this was last night. I've been looking at stuff this morning and preparing for this call.
My humble suggestion would be you just sit down, take a couple of minutes to yourself, and first of all, kind of look internally and just think about how that made you feel, okay? And number two, I'm assuming that you're going to ask him why and whatever else, and just sit down and write down the questions that you're going to ask him. Now, I know a lot of people on this call are listening to this are going to think, well, what's he talking about writing down questions? He's always talking about writing down. But let me kind of give you this analogy. Think of the best film you ever saw in your life, best movie you ever saw in your life, okay? The actors are using a script. They didn't think of this on the spot. The worst thing you can do is to go into a situation that you know is coming up and not script out what you want to say. not write down questions you want to ask, and not write down questions that you think you might get, and write down the answers that you want to give. Does that make sense to you?
You're going to be emotional, and when you're emotional, your brain doesn't work as good.
If you get emotional, if you lose your temper, if you start shouting, or if you just kind of act indignant, you've lost straight away, because people will not react rationally to emotion. They will react with emotion, which means the two of you end up shouting. And at the end of the day, you don't want that. If it is a situation that you think this guy is going to be a bad client, is he your first client, Rob?
Yeah.
And I know it's emotional for you in your first client, but I mean, there might have been an emergency. It could be a lot of things that happened to that gentleman. But I mean, if you think or you even suspect that this could be an ongoing thing with this man, or that you're going to get fobbed off onto a manager, I would seriously think about taking him on and let him go and then use that time again to look for other clients. Now, I know that's very easy for me to say because of the situation I'm in, but believe me, when you get to the stage, and you will get to the stage that I'm at, you'll know what I'm talking about, because you will be so busy working with your good clients and with the clients who are actually doing what you want them to do, but you won't have time for people who are missing meetings. You won't have time for talking to people who have to go back to the owner and say exactly what you said. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
I know, Rob, you need this client. You need the income. It's your first client or two, and I think in this situation, you're just going to have to roll with it because you don't want to lose that income, and you're just going to have to be flexible. But certainly, as you get more clients, you won't put up with it. But unless I'm wrong, you'll probably put up with it for the time being. Maybe he's got a good reason. But you know, as you're busier, you won't have time for that.
Yeah, that sounds right on. Yeah, it's kind of a key client for me right now because it's one that's been in the area for 48 years, and I know if I can get results, even putting up with a bunch of crap from them, if I can get results, then I've got a reputation.
You're going to have to kiss butt for a little bit.
All right, no problem with that. Rob, you sound like you have a good attitude. You sound like you have an attitude of a guy I'd get on with. Action-orientated and, like, takes no crap. Now, if it's the case that you do need this client, my advice to you would be just double your efforts with the relationship. From my situation, I'm dictating when the meetings will be because my diary is so full and I know how long it takes me to drive to where I need to go and things like that. But, I mean, if it's the case that this guy will be hard to manage, let him ring you. And because you've only one or two clients, you might be able to be flexible around the time that you can actually see the guy. So maybe a way around it is, well, look, can you give me a call when you have an hour free? Can you give me a call when you have a half an hour free? I'll come over to you and we can talk about how the projects are going. Because at the end of the day, Rob, if you do four projects and it comes to getting paid, or one project and it comes to getting paid, and you haven't managed the relationship, as in tie down the situation as to how the client feels about how it's going, and it comes to getting paid and he says, well, it's not what I agreed, and you put all this time in and whatever else, I'm just very wary of not managing the relationship with a client. But if the case is you have the time, give me your business card and say, look, when you have a half an hour free or 20 minutes free or whatever it might take, give me a call. I'll come over and we can talk about it. Does that make sense? Does that help you out in any way?
Yeah, this is great. This manage the client is a great philosophy.
You're in a relationship business because you're working with a human being. So you have to manage that process. You really do.
You mentioned on the last call three businesses that have more business than they can really handle. In like service and customer service is kind of coming down a little. What were the specific USPs for those companies?
The first one is the veterinarian and pet grooming center. That's the actual one that increased the sales 63%. The USP for that is we know pets are your family, and that's why we treat them so well. The way I came up with that was in talking to the customers, you kind of get a feeling. And anybody that owns a pet or has owned a pet, they don't see them as pets. They give them names and they treat them as one of the family. And that's what came across in the customer survey. And that's what I used. I haven't had to change it. I mean, it seems to be working fantastic.
So where was that USP integrated in the business to start getting the results?
First of all, we got a sign put up over the business. It went on the sign. The receptionist says it now. It's on all the business cards they have. They don't have brochures and stuff like that at the moment, but it's on little placards on the reception desk. It's on their answering machine, and it's on any kind of media release that I've done for them. It's on it. It's everywhere. Just let me give you an overview of what to do with the USP. A USP is your differentiator, okay? And an easy way to look at it is, again, I'll give you an analogy because I speak in analogies. It's easier for me to relate. Think of the customer as a delivery system. A mortgage broker. Do you have mortgage brokers in the States, or do they call something different?
They're mortgage brokers, that's correct.
Okay. What is a mortgage broker or a delivery system for? I mean, if you really kind of look at it for a loan for a house, but if you think about what's a house, people don't buy houses, they buy homes. And what's a home to a client? It's security, it's somewhere to bring up a family, it's happy memories, it's a castle, it's a place of refuge, it's a place of solitude, it's a place of happiness. I suppose it's a kind of a generalized way of benefits, but it's a way to kind of get deeper into the business than just looking at it in a shallow kind of one-off lateral thing. I mean, if you can go to your client and think, for God's sake, don't say this to him, what are your delivery system for, because he'll look at you like you're crazy. And talk about in your own mental head, in your own head, say, what is this guy a delivery system for? And then talk to the customers and talk to the staff and just really dig deep. I mean, service quality. If you keep getting service and quality from them, you're doing the interview wrong. Keep asking questions. Dig deeper, dig deeper, dig deeper. And if it is a case that they're a commodity and all they can come up with is service, quality, and price, what you have to do then is use the USP to shift the buying criteria of the customers. What you have to do then is go out into the marketplace and do a really, really kind of strict competitor analysis, see what they're offering, and then see what your client is offering and see if there's any difference between the two and use that as your differentiator.
With your vet client, where did you integrate the USP that seemed to get all that 60% result?
You can't quantify the USP. That's because you can't really tell.
Was the sign in the card and the answer?
Yeah, you can't quantify what the USP.
Where did the growth come from with that specific client?
I would say the growth from all my clients came from the integration of the USP, as in sales training. When you're talking about integration of USP, you're talking about the sales process of the client that you're in there. Now, if they don't have a sales process, you have to build one for them. If your client doesn't have a sales process, they're just open a shop or a premises and let nature take its course and hope people come into the place. That means they don't have a sales process. You have to build a sales process for them, as in attracting customers, what to say and do when the customer comes in, set up a referral system, set up a follow-up system. It's a lot of work. And then train during all this building a sales process. You have to train the staff in sales techniques. It's not as hard as it sounds, but that's where you're going to get a huge, huge amount of growth.
So can you discuss some specifics with that client? How did you start getting clients into the vet, and how were you converting, and what were you upselling?
Sure. The first thing I did when I went in was I set up a risk reversal guarantee and set up a referral system. That took me about a week to kind of convince Fiona with the guarantee. The risk-free guarantee for my vet is if you're not happy with this grooming and treatment your dog receives, the client will give you free grooming for 6 months. And he kind of went a bit iffy with that because, again, the mentality was, well, everybody's going to take advantage of that. And sure, people have taken advantage of it, but the amount of business that's brought in against the percentage that is taking advantage is minimal compared to the amount of business that's brought in. The risk reversal is just one strategy I've used to bring them in. The other one is a referral system. And all the referral system is you bring in a friend who has never been a customer before, and you get your dog groomed for free. If you bring in five, you get your dog treated and groomed free for a month, and then it goes on. If you bring in six, 2 months, seven, 3 months. The client actually becomes a salesperson for you in return for free service. And that's just a very simple referral method and payment that doesn't cost you any money. It just costs you service. So that's bringing all the clients in. Then you've got your closing, the actual sales technique and the closing techniques that you teach them. And then you've got follow-up. And follow-up starts when the person leaves the building. They get a new customer letter thanking them for the service. They get an introduction to the referral system. And they get reminded again about the risk-free reversal. And that's all within 3 weeks of becoming a new customer. Periodically then, every customer is contacted once a month. And not to sell them anything. Very, very little selling goes on. I'll tell you how. In January, they get a New Year's card and letter, wish them a Happy New Year. February, again, this comes from a database. Couples get a Valentine's reminder, whatever it might be, reminder to the husband not to get flowers for the Valentine's. Okay? March, then, is Easter. Happy Easter. I think April, May, June, we send out sales letters. July, August, September, then, you get a letter wishing them a happy summer. October, they get Happy Halloween. And then you're into the Christmas season again. So November would be Happy Thanksgiving or whatever. So you've sent 12 letters without selling anybody anything. You just keep in contact. And periodically then, within that chain of 12 letters, you send a letter offering them something.
For more interviews like this, please go to hardtofindseminars.com. I got a question. Who's paying for the mailing? Are you paying that out of your fees?
That's part of the system. That's down to them.
Okay.
This is an ongoing maintenance system for them, for their customers.
And they're doing all the mailing?
I write the letters, or I give them a template for the letters, and that's part of the system.
Okay. How about one of your other clients and go through some of the descriptions of how you've been able to benefit their business?
It's the exact same thing. I've just duplicated, like, risk reversal referral systems. They're the two most powerful systems you're ever going to use to get people in without using any money. Referral system, pay your clients, your good customers, your good clients to become your salespeople and reward them for it.
You set those up in step two?
I set those up in step two, yeah. But as part of the sales process, because you are part of the sales process. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Let me interject. So this system that you've got for the pet grooming place, you developed it, it's working, and you're modeling it with a lot of your other clients.
Correct.
So the big aha is you got 17 clients, but a lot of the work's already been done and you're just duplicating.
It's just duplication. I mean, everything is within the system. Everything that I'm using is within the system. That's the beauty of the HMA system. It can be used for any business known to man. Everybody needs a risk reversal. Everybody needs a referral system. Everybody needs JVs. Everybody needs a differentiator, a USP or EVP, whatever it might be. And if you find that it works for one, just duplicate it for the rest of them. Now, will it work all the time for every client? No, of course it won't, because every client is going to be slightly different. So you modify it. And that's what I love about the HMA system. It's so flexible. Let me put this here. Rob, if you found a system for communicating, like the 12-letter sequential, keeping in touch with the client, 12 letters without selling anything, and that worked for one client, wouldn't you use it for another client?
Absolutely.
Of course you would. So it's just duplication, duplication. You're on a huge learning curve at the start, but that'll level out. And you'll get to know what works. You'll get to know what can work and will work. But, I mean, feel free to use that. I'm sure you've got holidays over in the States that you can use for each month just to send letters out or an email even. It doesn't have to be letters. I only use letters because at the time they had addresses, but they didn't have emails or phone numbers for their customers. I mean, use a phone call. Hi, how you doing? This is Dave from Dave Fan Consulting. I'm just calling to wish a happy Christmas or a happy New Year. Listen, the thing is not to get flowers for your wife on Valentine's Day.
How many times have you guys gotten flowers on Valentine's Day, or even, you know, Mother's Day or Father's Day or whatever it might be?
Every time somebody sees a letter coming in your door, don't let it be a sales letter. Nobody wants to talk to that guy. I mean, informational stuff as well as what to feed your pet, why you shouldn't feed your dog chocolate. I mean, I didn't know that. I know it now. Feeding chocolate to a dog can actually kill the dog. I mean, I didn't know that. I fed my dog chocolate all the time. I stopped that now. Informational things like that. So it becomes a relationship. It doesn't just become, I sell you stuff. It becomes, listen, if something happens, you ring up and say, look, the dog is shedding, or what should I do, or do you know a good shears, or whatever it might be. You have to get to that situation where you are the only logical provider of what they want. And the only way you can do that is build a relationship. The only way you can build a relationship is to keep in contact. And the only way, right way to keep in contact is information, sequential contact, and do not sell anything every time.
Hi there. Anyone who's got some questions for Dave?
Yeah, hi, Dave. This is Paul in Cincinnati, Ohio. How you doing?
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Doing great. I had a question, and that was regarding when you were establishing your JVs to the solicitors and accountants. What type of criteria did you initially use? I know you had indicated that you had done some web research and everything, but what were your initial criteria in selecting the vendors? And then would you elaborate a little bit more on your selection process?
Sure. It's not very complicated. When I was looking for JV partners, all I did was I sat down and I thought to myself, what type of businesses do I envision myself to be working with? Who am I looking for? Where are my clients? So I wrote down a kind of generalized picture of who I thought I'd be working with, small business owners, so many employees, making so much, and whatever it might be. And then I drew a line down the middle of the paper, and I said, what do businesses need? They need web designers, because everybody has a web page these days. They need accountants, because they don't have accountants. Well, they have to, by law, have accountants. And if they don't have accountants, then you don't want them as clients. Everybody needs a solicitor. Now, I got a question. Does everybody understand what a solicitor is? A solicitor in Ireland and the UK is the same thing as a lawyer in the States. And everybody needs a solicitor. All I did was then, I got the yellow pages, golden pages. That's the same thing over in the States as it is here, is it?
Yes.
Okay. And I just looked up this lawyers and solicitors and web designers in my local area, went to them, and explained and educated what a joint venture was, what I was coming from, where it was, and the benefits that I could bring them. Number one, money for nothing, basically. And number two, that they will come out looking like heroes if they send their clients to me and their clients start making more money.
Okay.
Then I asked them, look, these are the sort of businesses that I intend working with. I gave them the generalized overview and I said, do you have any customers of yours that fit this description? And then it was either yes or no. And that was a qualifying question.
Uh-huh.
Now, another qualifying question, but it wasn't really a question, it was more of a feeling, was, did they actually understand what I was talking about, rather than just nodding their head and kind of just saying yes for the sake of saying yes? But that's a feeling that I can't teach, I can't verbalize. I'm very good at reading body language. That's why I never do an op analysis over the phone. I do all my op analysis in person because I'm very good at reading body language when people are uncomfortable, and 9 times out of 10 I know when someone's lying to me if they're doing it and standing in front of me. So, I mean, if I thought they were uncomfortable or if I thought I couldn't work with them, I thought there might be a problem. In the beginning, it's very hard to do that because you're looking for your first client and, you know, money might be tight and cash flow problems. But I still think that you have to qualify up front on everything, and if you don't do that, you're going to be in problems down the line. It's not a very complicated thing. You just find out what kind of client you want to work with. Find out what are the businesses that client needs, uses, or wants. Go to those businesses. Explain what a JV is. If they kind of get the gist, then qualify them by saying, this is the sort of business that I want to work with. Do you have any businesses that fit this criteria? And if they say yes, well, then you kind of look and say, well, okay, this guy could be a good JV partner. And if they say no, well, then you say, well, look, I'm sorry, it's not going to work, you know?
Right.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. In any retrospect, is there anything that you would have done to improve that process?
No, because I've only done it once.
Okay.
You can only kind of change something in retrospect when you've done it a lot of times.
Right.
I've only had to do it the once so far. Because it's such a simple strategy, I don't think you could actually simplify it even more. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I think if I kind of sat down and thought about it, I'd probably make it a little bit more complicated than it needs to be. I think a lot of people do a lot of stuff and make it complicated because they think it has to be complicated when it really doesn't need to be.
Right.
Does that help you in any way?
Yes, it does. I was just wondering, once again, in retrospect, if there was anything you would improve in the system. My next-door neighbor is a bill collector for small businesses, and she's agreed to do a mailing and endorsement of me.
Tell me how you got that.
This is the end of part one, the conference call with Dave Flannery and Rob Henshaw, Michael Sinoff, and other HMA consultants. Please continue to part two.